We're live, babe.
Dude, look what I just read. An unwashed pillowcase has more bacteria than a toilet seat.
No, it's not true. How?
I don't know.
Explain the science behind that. Your bum hole is not done in your fucking pillowcase.
Okay, well, just wait on it, bitches. I'm going to freaking find the research.
And you know what? When I am in New York City, every time I go to sleep, if I don't wash my hair, it smells like a dumpster.
Ew, it's so true.
And so maybe there are like some sort poopy of particles? Dumpster particles in my
You have poopy particles.
Exactly.
You have poopy hair.
Exactly.
You have poopy hair. Are you going to cock block our recording session today, Cup?
No, she's going to settle in. She's settling in. She's going to be good. So, for me personally, the reason why I wanted to start doing this in the first place, a big part of it was, well, one, for like a new challenge, a new life experience, but also I really wanted to build community. It's been a huge theme for me, honestly, for the past few years, like in my mid to late 20s, where some friends fall off, phases of life end and new ones begin, or you're in that weird middle phase, which we can talk about at some other time because that's a subject in and of itself.
Help.
But I do feel like from my perspective, the older I've gotten, the more I've craved community that really aligns with me. And it's felt so hard to find that as an adult. I don't know where to look sometimes. I don't know like what to throw myself into. You know, it's like who, what, where, when, and why. I want this thing and I don't really know how to get it. But I do feel like a lot of people feel super lonely and I go through that for sure. I'm sure you feel that at times. And
definitely
community is just so important. And I've learned so much about like how we're a social species and we're meant to exist in groups. And for today, I just kind of wanted to talk about some things that have come up for me recently having to do with community and just relevant experiences I've had that have made it super top of mind for me again. Yeah. And I know that you've had a couple things that have come up for you too. So let's get into it.
Yeah. I echo every sentiment that you just said from start to finish. And I'm definitely starting to feel more so than I ever did how critical the community and the true connection to, right? Like the non-forced pure connection that you find in some people and just how immensely critical it is. It feels like a soul hug when you find it and when you nurture it and nurture those relationships. And I completely agree that as I've changed as a person and pivoted, and I have such a desire to pivot in so many ways right now, that comes with the desire to expand my world and my friend group. And it's definitely been harder than expected to find like-minded people. But the beautiful thing is there's so many people out there just like that. I just need to find them. And so I'm glad that we're doing this. And also there's so many things that I'm interested in to expand my search and, you know, my desire for this. So
yeah, recently I realized for myself, finding like-minded people means doing things that you love. Like, I think it's going to be harder to find like-minded people and build community that feels really genuine and really supportive by just casting out your net to everybody and just seeing if you catch anyone,
true.
Like, I think that it makes more sense to understand that you're probably going to meet people while doing things that really light you up.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think we just don't spend enough time doing things that really light us up. You know, we're so sad. We're so like drowning in our everyday tasks that.
Can I just say, it's not even, I'll call myself out on this right now. It's not even that I don't spend enough time doing what I love. I feel like I don't even spend enough time asking myself what I love, let alone doing it.
So true.
I feel like I spend so much of my day pacifying in a lot of ways right now, particularly, which makes me sad, but that's a different conversation. But yeah, I feel like there's a real conversation that's begun to happen with myself around the fact that I don't even set aside the time to explore my mind in so many ways that I desire to. And that's changing. I can feel that changing because I am starting to set aside the time, but it's not even that I don't spend the time doing what I love. I feel like I don't spend the time even exploring what I love, let alone digging my hand, like getting my hands wet with it, you know?
I feel like I don't think that that's so unusual. I think that for a lot of life, especially for people who do the school track, a lot of our early life and into our early 20s is so structured for us, and everybody tells us what to do and we do it, you know, to a certain extent. Of course, like people, I love it, you know, teenagers, young people in their early 20s are exploring passions and stuff. Of course, it's not like no one's doing that, but I do think that it's almost like soup. For the flavors to really come out, it kind of has to simmer and wait for a while.
Tastes better the next day, baby.
You know, because I think that we come out of this cycle of school and then we go into work and then we get into that cycle. And I think you kind of get to a point in life, maybe in your 20s, maybe in your early 30s, depending on the person, where you realize, is this it? You maybe are just start to really recognize unfulfillment within you. And everyone has different levels of that discomfort that they can tolerate. But I think once you get to your level where you're like, this is not discomfort that I want to tolerate anymore, you start to seek what you love. And again, the first step to seeking, like you said, isn't necessarily, okay, I'm just going to go do everything. For some people it is, but sometimes it's, I'm just going to get a book on something I love, or I'm going to look for documentaries on something I love, or I'm going to go on YouTube and, you know, just like spend time digging into involving myself, at least mentally, in something that intrigues me. And then you go from there, you know, and I do think that it takes courage to move from that learning phase and that kind of silent mental phase where you're curious about something to action. I think it takes courage to do that for anything, even small things. I think that even for people who love change and love exploring, it still is an effort to put yourself out there. So yeah, learning is the first step, and it's a really, really important step, but it's not the only step.
Yeah.
And I think the actionable part, really putting yourself out there and trying something new, is where you're going to start building community. That's really valuable for you, you know?
Do you want to tell us about your amazing experience last week that kind of triggered some of these thoughts?
Yes. So we have a long history of incarceration in our family. It's been kind of a lifetime with our brother that we had of just being a support system and loving someone who was incarcerated. And that comes with so many low points and so many challenges. And it really just, I think,
emphasis on so much.
Yes. No, that's what I'm saying. I think so it made us who we are. It's a huge part of my perspective on life, my perspective on what I think about social issues, like how I want to treat people, how I see people in general. Like, it made a huge impression on me and on you, both of us equally.
Yeah.
And when he passed away a few years ago, you know, I always knew that I really wanted to get back involved with that community somehow, some way. But it's extremely emotional to go to a place where you lost someone and where you struggled with somebody and where you know.
And where you shared so much love, like, and so much life.
Totally.
Like, you shared so much life. I always use this analogy. Think of if you had a loved one or a sibling where you could only see them on a dirt path at the top of a mountain, and it's some obscure random place, but that place holds so much. You lived so much life in that, like,
within four walls that a lot of memories for over a decade were made within the same theoretical four walls, you know, and that shapes so much of the relationship, but it also doesn't. It's pretty amazing. It's so fluid. People are so dynamic, like you said about yourself at the beginning, that four walls can only really hold so much, especially with someone like our brother. He was just so dynamic and
imaginative, and he was so far beyond the label that he was given as prisoner. Like, he was everything and more than that.
Totally. And like, that really opened a door for me to understand, like, he's not the only one. You know, there are so many people living that life that have so much potential and that can easily be assets to our world. So that's like a huge passion for me, is sharing love with people who don't consistently receive it, and just like shining a light on certain issues that not everybody in society is privy to. Like, not everybody gets to have the same life experience that Casey and I have, loving someone so deeply.
And emphasis on gets to.
Like, that's what I meant. Yeah.
I know you use that word on purpose, but I just will say this a million times over in this space and on every space that I talk about Ryan. Being his little sister has made me an exponentially better person, but also just my soul so much better. I'm truly a better spirit, and I will take it. I believe in multiple lives, and I just think that, like, his impact, whether he knew it or not in the moment, just has elevated every part of me, and I think of all of us, honestly.
Absolutely. No, biggest privilege of my life thus far, being his sister.
Agreed.
And there will be many privileges of life. Huge privilege is being your sister as well. So I'm not gonna.
Oh, no.
No, because I know when I talk about him, I speak of him like the best this, the best that, because he is, but also you're here and you're the best too.
Oh my gosh. No. He's also our only brother. So you can just say he was the best brother in the entire world and none of us sisters. If you say you're the best sister, then all of us other sisters are going to be like, bitch. And what about me?
True. True. But with a spirit like that, it just...
Now, Ryan was truly one of one.
Yeah.
He was so fucking special. He is so fucking special.
No, agreed. And so that depth of connection that we have with him and that I had with him just opened up a part of my heart for empathy that is a major gift that I am grateful for every single day and plan to use and use as a tool for good for the rest of my life. But I used to say to him all the time, like, we're going to share your story. I'm so excited. I'd be like, you have to journal. We'd write poetry together. I would be like, this is going to be a tool for good in the world. I know that this is extremely traumatic and extremely painful for you to go through. And to minimize that would be awful and ignorant. And also, my perspective with him was to always try to be like, somehow, some way, this is going to be a tool for change and a tool for good. Like, you are too powerful. You are too powerful, and we are going to do this together. And so that was a huge goal for me throughout our shared life experience, was like, how are we going to use this to better ourselves and better, hopefully, lives around us? And he was super on board. And unfortunately, when he passed away, I was like, well, fuck, I don't have his writing talents anymore. I don't have his like incredibly creative mind. Like, how am I going to do this by myself? Just extremely daunting for me because I really relied on his incredible mind and heart and spirit. And moving forward out of that space, I've realized that that mind and heart and spirit still exists. I knew it so well, and I still have it. I still have all of that at my disposal to share with people. And yeah, so I just always knew I wanted to go back, but it's grief is its own journey. It's intense. It's crazy.
And also,
not to mention COVID happened, and a lot of these programs, I mean, everything shut down, restaurants, literally everything, but especially, I mean, any program for prisoners was definitely shut down a considerable amount of time.
You can imagine why, just because people are living in such close quarters with each other that mm-hmm. disease can spread so fast in a situation like that. So they were very, very, very locked down, which is a different conversation and so
inhumane.
So detrimental and inhumane for all of them. But
exactly. I had reached out to this group right after Ryan passed away because I was just moved by what I saw. And I know you saw it too. We both saw a video and we were like, wow, that's incredible. I'd really like to participate in this. And then obviously COVID started at the beginning of 2020 and, you know, the lockdowns happened for a couple years. And I recently saw that they were back up and running again and running their prison like intervention programs, basically, where they go to prisons and they do trauma healing circles. And I wanted to know more. I reached out, I filled out a volunteer form, and I just had a gut feeling like I need to do this. So I did. I heard that they were going down to Donovan Prison, and I decided it's time. I'm just going to pull the trigger and go. I was a freaking raw nerve driving down there. I was shaky inside. I was so emotional and nervous and stressed. I was shaking. And the morning of the first day, because it was a 2-day program, the morning of the first day, I just felt so sensitive. Like, any thought of my brother, any memory, people asking me about him, I was just, every single time someone even asked me a question, I didn't even have to answer. And I just started crying. I was so emotional. And I thought, oh my God, how am I going to do this? I don't even know if I can. So I went in and immediately just started connecting with individuals in there. One after the other, you know, coming up to me, introducing themselves, and just with such politeness and kindness and just like welcoming spirits. And we introduced ourselves, all the volunteers as a group, and the leader of the group asked if I would be willing to share my experience with my brother, with the men who showed up. And I didn't know what to expect, but the level of understanding that I could feel in the air between myself and this group of strangers was just a feeling I had been seeking for a while. You know, it was like shared life experience, even if it wasn't directly shared.
Yeah.
It was like love shared for a certain life experience and just an understanding between two people that like how painful this road is and how isolating it is. And the day was just so connective, expansive. A huge thing for me that I kind of kept sharing with all the guys was me realizing while I was there how healing of an experience this was for me. I showed up fully with the intention of sharing love with people that I know don't receive it that often and really need it. And it ended up just being an experience where I felt so connected to my past and my loved one. And I also felt this beautiful realization that this was an act of him helping the world through me.
Yeah.
Because without my experience with him, I never would have been there. I never would have connected with these guys.
Yeah.
He was the glue. Like, he was the reason why this was happening. And I just realized there are so many ways for you to expand somebody after they're gone. Mm-hmm. The impression that people make on you is so massive. And if you realize that somebody's impact on you is powerful enough to drive you to give back in life, that is gorgeous. I don't know what better thing like
you could and
what ode you can leave.
Yeah, literally. What better legacy you can lead than to inspire the people that loved you.
For Ryan, the legacy is amazing. And for me, like, I just realized he's my reason for so many things that I do. And I am so inspired by that.
Yeah.
It just makes him feel so expansive to me. And to bring it back to community, community is something I've been seeking for so long. And I've thought it should look certain ways, you know, like I've thought, oh, I need to find a boyfriend now, or I need to like make a group of girlfriends that's so fun that wants to go out with me and wants to do these fun activities with me, or whatever it may be. I need a yoga community. I'm desperate for my yoga community. I'm trying all these different yoga places all across the city, and I'm not finding it. And I was sitting in this room with a bunch of human beings who have, unfortunately, can relate to each other through pain. And while that's deeply unfortunate, to witness people turn pain into healing and healing in community was so powerful for me. Like, it's going to make me cry, but to see them see each other, be honest about life and their feelings and what's been done to them and what they've done to others, and to look each other in the eye and say, you're worth something and I'm here for you and I'm proud of you for showing up today, and hearing about the evolution of their lives and from their childhoods, the amount that they've gone through, the amount of adverse childhood experiences that these men have shared, so many different forms of abuse and very intense life experiences, poverty, homelessness, everything.
Emphasis on abuse.
Yes, yes.
So many different types of abuse.
Every version, physical, emotional, witnessing domestic violence, witnessing tons of things. And maybe I shouldn't say them because I know that these topics are really triggering for people. And also, I don't want to infringe on anyone's privacy, but I will say very traumatic life experiences. Well, every single man in that room.
Compassion Prison Project talks a lot about ACEs.
Yes.
And so it's very open what the ACEs are and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So thankfully, we're not like outing, you know, sexual abuse or something like that is one of the ACEs, because that is one. And unfortunately, people all over the world suffer, you know, and are victims of that.
Yes. To be able to physically stand next to people who walk in unison with you, acknowledging their traumas, is so powerful. Trauma makes people feel extremely alone. A consequence of trauma is usually shame. We usually internalize our pain and think that it says something about us, right? Like, if my parents treated me this way, it must mean because I'm not worth anything, or I'm unlovable, or it must mean that violence is a solution in life, or no coping mechanisms are ever taught. There are so many false realities and perspectives that are shaped by trauma, mm-hmm. and that lead people to make all different types of decisions that are completely unjustified, but they don't happen in a vacuum. They don't happen for no reason.
Yeah.
And so to see grown men who have been extremely harmed and who have caused a lot of harm stand next to each other and say, look each other in the eyes and say, this is what I've been through. I stand with you. We are together in this. Learning what that does to their brains and how that affects them, and being able to rehumanize themselves and say, okay, I wasn't just born awful. I wasn't just born a monster, you know, like,
yeah,
all of these things accumulated within me and built on top of each other and led me down this path and shaped my perspective on what was true about life. I'm unsafe. I can't trust anyone, blah, blah, blah. And then to be able to get to a point where they say, is this real? Is this true? Because I don't want to feel this way for the rest of my life. And for them to seek out community to share on that journey is so powerful to me. Like,
yeah.
To know that they all came here, they all got a flyer that said, if you want to heal your trauma, show up on this day at this time. Mm. And they all said, I think I should try that.
And can I just say something too? Two different things. Actually, sorry, do you want to continue
your
ahead. Thought? First, I'll say one of my favorite quotes that sits with me to this day is, a healer doesn't heal you. A healer leaves space for you to heal yourself. Mm. And in such an amazing way, every single person in that room was a healer, and they were also being healed mm-hmm. by just all being together and holding space for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing that really stands out to me from what you just said, and I think every human being, actually, this would resonate with them, is when we hear other people's experiences, we often have such a deep bleeding heart for the pain and suffering that they've endured. And I think for so many of those men, if I were to have to guess, so many of the experiences that they listened to that day were so similarly mirroring their own experiences. Mm-hmm. But we as humans don't give ourselves the same grace that we give other people, right? And so hearing someone else's story and having your heart cracked open for the man next to you that experienced so much suffering naturally starts to crack you open to yourself, where you start to feel that soft. I just believe that it can breed like a softness towards self that
doesn't
normally happen.
No, that's the point.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about moral injury, which is when you see something happen or when you do something yourself that goes against what you feel in your soul
Never
is right.
Never heard that term before. I love that term.
Yes.
I don't love it, but
it's vivid. It's very easy to hold on to.
Yeah.
It like gives you a feeling inside. But yeah, so if you see something done or if you participate in doing something that goes against what you know is right in your soul. We talked a lot about that. And to be able to reconcile horrible behavior with the concept that you are worthy and that you are good inside, that's really hard for people who have inflicted harm. That's almost insurmountable for a lot of them. A lot of them succumb to the labels of horrible person, selfish person, monster, all this stuff. And maybe don't even recognize, or maybe don't even do it consciously, but subconsciously they're like, well, fuck it. All these people already think this about me, and I think it about myself, and my behavior reflects it. So clearly, you know, like, whatever, it is what it is. And so to come upon that dilemma, to really face accountability for inflicting pain and inflicting harm, the only way to, I think, move through that is to figure out how to forgive yourself while being accountable. And I don't think you can forgive yourself for something that you don't understand. And I think understanding yourself and developing self-awareness and also just learning behavior patterns, generational trauma patterns, how all of these life experiences affect us, not only emotionally, but cognitively, like how they truly affect our brains and change our brain function, how we don't have access to certain brain functions while we're in states of fight or flight for the long term. And while we're—
That shit fascinates me so much.
It's amazing. And when everybody should learn about it.
You don't have access to certain areas of your empathy. Brain. That is—
When you're in shame, you don't have access to empathy. When you're in fight or flight, you don't have access to strategic planning, certain rational decision-making. Like,
so fascinating.
You aren't able to perform certain functions that would enable you to be a positively contributing member of society.
Yeah.
And so for them to be able to look at their lives and make sense of how they could have gotten to where they could have gotten opens the door for them to be able to potentially forgive themselves and hold that space to move through the extreme pain and shame of their behavior and get to a point where they can learn how to be an asset to themselves and to society. You know, they can learn how to really sit in empathy for others. You know, they can learn how to express their experience and share space with other people and be support systems, you know, and like be things that they never had. And to sit in a room with grown men learning this together as a group and sharing so much empathy with each other and watching them cry grown man tears, honestly, watching them cry their 5-year-old tears out of a grown man's body mm-hmm. was incredibly powerful for me. And yeah, I showed up because I wanted to help, and it ended up just helping me so much. And I felt like, wow, this is the type of— they are building the community here that I have been seeking for so long in my own life. Mm-hmm. People who have goals of inner peace and betterment for the world and for themselves, and figuring out how to contribute to this world and how to bring their own— how to figure out what their strengths are, and then how to contribute those strengths, you know, and just to see the wheels turning and to see the excitement and the hope was just beautiful. And it just has caused me to think so much on my journey of seeking community. And it made me realize, like, I've had a calling inside of me for so long to connect to this community. You know, I have a passion for prison reform and just being a supportive community member for change. And I just had an inkling like I should do this. And I did. And I found powerful community there. And they found powerful community with each other by showing up because they had an inkling that they should. And so I feel like it ended up being a lesson for me in showing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
It's like when you have a small calling, I mean, it was a huge calling within me, but like—
And this one was so emotionally loaded too,
yes,
right? Just
yeah.
Like it was your first time back at a prison since, you know, you had visited Ryan and he was alive. And so that commemorates just a different time of life. You know, we're AD, we're after death right now. So
totally.
That's from BC, before Christ. Just
totally.
Kidding. But yeah, it's not just any decision, right? It's one that's so charged.
Totally. There's layers to it where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to be super present because I don't know how overwhelmed emotionally I'm going to be thinking about my brother or how triggered I'm going to be in this space, you know? So yeah, I had fears and I was nervous, but I think that everyone has their own versions of fear and nerves when they're trying to figure out what step to take towards a passion, like an inner calling. I think that inner callings make everyone nervous and you never know what's right. No one ever knows what's right in terms of like, what's the right step to take? Not in terms of like, am I doing the right thing? Am I being a decent human? It's like, what's the right step to take now? You know, what do I do in my career? What's the right step to take? How do I chase this passion? What's the perfect first step to go in this direction? You know, like nobody really knows. I think the first step you take is perfect. It just ends up being perfect.
Yeah.
It's because it's the first step. It teaches you something.
Yeah.
And you just have to— I think getting started is often the hardest part in life. But yeah. But yeah, I wanted to get a little bit more granular with an experience that was really moving for me. And I've been thinking about it a lot ever since it happened. In one of these rooms, you know, there are volunteers, there are inmates, and there's just a mix of people. And everybody in there has had a different life experience. Some people had not experienced all that much trauma in their lives, and others had experienced extreme amounts. And there was one day where that was slightly at odds. While it was so binding to look around and see people who have gone through such similar stuff as you, it's also pretty wild to see people who haven't gone through any of the same stuff as you. And I think that that really stuck out to some of the people in this group. And so throughout the day, there were conversations about how is it possible that some people can not go through much or any trauma in their lives while other people are so flooded with it from such an early age? And how is it possible that this could happen in life? And so throughout the day, there was rumblings of this conversation. And finally, by the end of the day, it came to a head. You know, we had an exercise to do where we were able to get to know people one-on-one a lot more intimately and not just in a group setting. And so we paired off and we did this very, very emotionally intense exercise. And we were able to kind of debrief with our partners afterwards about it. And then we were able to share with the group after that debrief if we felt moved to. And one learning that came out of that experience was there was a shocking amount that people with not that much trauma and with a lot of trauma could still relate on in terms of life experience. We're all humans and we all go through a lot of the same emotional experiences to varying degrees, but we still do. And so, you know, there was this really surprising moment where people with such different life experiences were able to really relate to each other. And it was kind of revelatory for the people involved. And that question of, well, how do some people not have any trauma or have just such small amounts of it that it doesn't seem to impact their joy or like moving through life in a healthy way? What ended up coming to light was that oftentimes trauma is generational. So my grandpa went through what he went through, and he very likely passed on what he went through to my dad, who passed on what he went through to me. It's very challenging to break that cycle. It takes a lot of really focused intention and self-exploration and self-awareness and rising above your circumstances to break that cycle. And so what we found was it wasn't that the people came from no trauma. It was that somewhere down that line generationally, someone said, not anymore, no more, it ends with me. And they were able to face the music, understand their life experiences, heal, and make very clear decisions about how they were going to raise their kids and the life that they were going to share with the next generation and pass on, and that harm would not be passed on. And it was this beautiful moment where it was like, these people didn't come from no trauma. It's not that no trauma has ever touched generations of this family. It's that someone somewhere decided no more. And that was such a beautiful thing because it's empowering. It's empowering to realize, like, me as an individual, I have the ability to say no more and not pass it on and to change the world because of that. All the next generations that would come from me are not traumatized as a result of my trauma, you know? And that's extremely powerful. That's something that people can take on and realize, like, this is motivation for me to heal myself, you know, so that my kids don't have to go through this or my grandkids don't have to go through this, you know, so that pain is not passed on.
Yeah.
And that was so beautiful because at one point it was kind of divisive that, like, it's unfair that some people don't go through much trauma and some people go through so much, which honestly it is because it's not our faults. It's not our faults. But the flip side of that is that while it's not our fault, it is our decision. Once we're made aware that there is a decision to make where we can choose to do the work and we can own up and we can heal ourselves and not pass our trauma down to the next generations, like once you have that realization, how empowering is that?
Yeah.
You realize, like, I can be a real tool for change. And that's how it starts. And there was this quote that came up around this time that was really beautiful when hope was really alive, you know, and we realized, like, how much power we each hold as individuals in this world and how much power then once we find a community that shares in that those same desires, how much power that community has then. And this quote came up that says, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed individuals can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has.
Damn.
Chills.
Damn. Mic drop.
And
who said that? Whose quote is that?
Margaret Mead.
Margaret, I don't know you, but thank you for that.
Just imagining all the small rooms and the small groups of thoughtful, committed individuals that have changed the world to get it to where it is today. And the fact that, like, that's all it takes. You know, we look at the world and we think, God, some of these issues are completely insurmountable. It's so scary and disheartening and disempowering, the thinking about it that way, you know?
Yeah.
But then realizing, kind of taking back that power and realizing there is so much that you have control of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought, what an amazing eye-opening moment to show me, like, one, how powerful community is, and two, to motivate me to move towards all of those callings I have in my life, and just feeling like community will exist there. It will exist at the end, or like along that journey, you know, you will, just by doing something that feels true to you, that feels good to you and real to you. I think that energy is so palpable for others, like other people who live in their alignment, recognize that energy and are drawn to it. And in that way, you make community, like an energetic way, but in a more practical, tangible way, like when you're putting yourself in spaces where something that you're passionate about is going on, other people there are passionate about it too, or else they wouldn't be there.
Yep.
And that's, I think, just such a beautiful way. If you're wondering, like, how do I expand my life? You know, how do I, like, build and find people that want to invest themselves in similar things to me and that care about similar things to me? I think that that's really step one, you know, is like, yeah, like what you said at the very beginning, is figuring out what you care about and what you're drawn to, and then building the courage to try.
And I'll just say this, I'm going to preface it with, we are incredibly fortunate that this is the case, but we didn't grow up with anyone who knew anyone in prison. We grew up in a place that wasn't overrun by police, and we didn't know really anyone who had gone to prison or who was in prison other than Ryan. And our friends didn't know anyone who had gone to prison or was in prison. Some of our friends didn't even know that our brother was in prison, depending on if, you know, Carly was a little bit more.
I was really private about
it.
Protective.
My close friends did know about it. And I just want to say that I have a handful of people in mind that wanted to understand so bad and held so much space in any way they could. Even at a young age, I remember people being not only receptive, but also just supportive in any way they could, even though I had no tools to process it. So they certainly didn't have any tools to process it, you know, but finding a community of people that understand that part of our lives that was so massive, it was so impactful, it was so hard and painful. And not only that, it just was such a critically big part of our lives. Ryan was such a centerfold of our life. Us as siblings and us as a family were so fortunate. We're very, very, very close. And just because he was away did not mean that we were any less close. It brought its own set of challenges in so many different ways. But I think for you, and, you know, I'm excited to be able to experience it myself as well, but just through your experience, being able to connect with people that understand that world that you lived in your entire life and that you grew up in and, you know, witnessed, is so important to validate that part that is inside of you and that you were seen fully. And so I'm sure
it kind of felt almost like how I imagine it would feel at, like, AA meetings.
Yeah.
Or how it might feel at, like, survivor's therapy for certain, like,
absolutely,
forms of abuse or something, like meeting with groups of people who have shared traumas and shared life experiences is really powerful. It's community. When you realize you're not alone in something, how much lighter you feel so much lighter, so much more empowered. Yeah, I think that you just feel understood, and
you feel seen in a way that you don't normally feel seen. And that's such a critical piece of being a human being, is it's feeling seen in your entirety.
Yeah.
And
belonging.
Yeah. Being around people that you feel are seeing you for all that you are, or such for a piece of yourself that is not often seen by people, maybe?
No, I think that there are aspects of life that are considered to be shameful or that are really linked with shame. And those parts of life aren't necessarily talked about openly all the time. And I think that when people don't understand something or they're afraid of something, that can cause a real lack of empathy.
Yeah.
Because when people are seeking safety, I think that it's hard to open your mind to duality in life where two things can be true in the same at the same time, you know, where like people can do horrible things and still have good in them and still be redeemable. Like that concept is really hard for people to be open to because it changes what solutions look like for people.
Yeah.
And it means that more effort has to be put in as a society to uplift each other. And it means that we as individuals have to be accountable for something when we don't feel like we should have to be. You know, if I haven't ever done anything horrible to anyone else, why should I be accountable? Well, the way that our society runs contributes to a lot of horrible things being done to a lot of people. And so looking at that and being accountable for that as a member of society, and it's very daunting to think, how could this ever change, you know? And so essentially for you to have to hold the duality that people can do really, really horrible, awful things and still be redeemable and still be good and should still get a second chance oftentimes after a lot of healing, you know, and with a lot of cooperation and a lot of like work done, that opens the door so that lots of other things need to be excavated about the way that we live our lives as well. And that's really daunting. It's really daunting. Look at a huge problem and the one solution that people have relied on to admit that it's ineffective. That's really scary for a lot of people. And, you know, for me, humanizing people and learning about them creates a space where I don't want to look people in the eyes who are suffering and just be like, well, figure it out yourself. Bye. But it's so much easier to do that when I always turn my head to every problem. You know, well, I don't know that person, so it doesn't affect me personally. Like every time I see a homeless person, if I just look away or pretend they're not there, or, you know, like if I just avoid every problem ever and don't allow it to affect me emotionally, it makes holding certain truths a lot harder.
Yeah.
But when you look something in the eye and you have to recognize its humanity, it's kind of do or die. And for me personally, it's very motivating because I'm like, okay, well, if you were someone I really, really loved, I would be all in to find a solution, you know, and just like on a human level, I love humans and I do want to help. So I don't know if that made any sense, but.
Definitely. Sounds like it was a very impactful experience for everybody involved. And I'm just so grateful that organizations like that exist and that people like you and all the other volunteers that dedicate their time and energy. And it is so much emotional
labor
by every single human being in that space.
It is.
Every man and woman that enters that space and lets their guard down and their walls down and emotes at that level in that vulnerable of a space. I think it's just amazing that the work that people do.
It was incredibly freeing. It lightened my burden. I don't want it to seem like, oh, it was so hard and it was so overwhelming because I do want people to understand that like I came out of that with a zest for life and like a peace in my heart that I have not felt for a very long time. It was extremely powerful to me. It really felt like it changed me slightly as a human. I felt like if I kept doing this all the time, I will change entirely as a human. Like it was very powerful for me. So I would highly encourage anybody, if anybody has a heart to like invest themselves in any sort of community rebuilding, whatever that means to you, or your own rebuilding or your kids rebuilding or your friends, whatever it is, whatever calls to you. I think everyone has some sort of calling, even if it seems daunting, even if it seems scary to engage with vulnerability in general. It's scary, but and it might be tough. There are moments where it feels very, very tough, but the result is love and freedom and motivation and
connectedness,
peace, belonging, like these things that we seek in life. that so many of us seek. That was the outcome for me. And I really think that it would be for anyone who's throwing themselves into like something that is doing good in whatever way it is, whatever way you want to. If you invest yourself into doing good, you reap all those benefits. I'm just 100% positive of it.
Amen.
I feel so calm right now after that conversation. I feel very grounded.
I love hearing about, I mean, I loved hearing last week about your experience, and I loved it just as much today hearing.
I just love being able to marry so many different things about life that, you know, some of them maybe not everybody can relate to, but I think the root of most things, most people can relate to, you know, root feelings of like pain and how that shapes your perspective. Almost everybody can relate to that concept. When you think about why am I the way I am, you probably have a story. It may be accurate or it may not be. Oftentimes it's not fully accurate, but with like a lot of excavating or therapy and blah, 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 like I just think that we can all relate on a human level so much. And I just love conversations and experiences in life that remind me how connected we all are on this planet at the core. They just give me life. I just love them.
Same. Feels like the reason we're on Earth.
Okay, I think that we're there.
I think we're there.
I love you so much.
Love you too. Great talk. Proud of you. Thank you for sharing with us.
You're welcome. No, I'm eager. I'm like, I'm probably gonna drown everybody in this.
Listen, bitches, when I go, you are hearing the end of me. You are not hearing the end of me. I am about to be the Dalai Lama after I go. I'm gonna be dropping fucking shit.
You're gonna be dropping shit.
I'm gonna be dropping a lot of wisdom.
Wisdom turds on your ass.
Wisdom turds on your ass. But no, you're not gonna hear the end of me. I'm gonna be talking about it forever.
Just kidding. No, I will be too. Okay, well, if anybody has listened to this,
damn, you love us.
I'm freaking grateful. No, that's so fun.
Did you listen thus far? All the way here?
Just building kidding. Community, dog. I love you so much. If you're listening to this, I love you.
I love you too.
Okay. Talk soon.
Toodles.
Bye.